Welcome everyone to the Sustainability Café, the podcast of IMC Krems, all about sustainability. In this podcast, we regularly talk to different people connected to the university, staff members, professors, you know, about their perspectives and points of contact with the topic. Until now, the smooth, informed and clearly superior tones of Victoria Engelmeier guided you through the episode of this third season. But to finally stop HR sending not so polite reminders to Victoria about diversity and gender balance in the cafe, fortune picked me, Karl Michael Höferl, for this episode to finally represent the severely underrepresented group of men in podcasting. Besides having unsubstantiated opinions about nearly everything, and I can guarantee you nearly everything, I'm also having the honor of managing the Sustainability Management Study Program here at IMC Krems. So welcome back to the Sustainability Café, your cozy corner for meaningful conversations about sustainability, saving the world, and everything in between. And to start with this male energy Victoria told me to bring into the podcast, she didn't do it, I just made it up, but today's episode is really special. So we already included a quota man for unasked but highly quality mansplaining, so check we did this. And for the first time, and Czech, you know, no pun intended, but haha, we have a guest from the Czech Republic here. Today, we're joined by Dr. Petra Tichimukova from the University of South Bohemia. Being a brilliant researcher with a strong background in sociology and religion, she will definitely bring some valuable new perspectives to our discussion. And since Petra is currently spending her Erasmus Plus teaching mobility here at IMC Krems and has a very tight schedule, grab your coffee, get comfortable, and let's dive into our conversation about the role of sociology for sustainability science, happiness, and the power of international cooperation. So Petra, thanks for joining us. What I learned from Victoria is that the toughest question is always at the beginning. And the toughest question is, well, what's sustainability for you, especially since as a sociologist might have a very special angle on the topic?
Thank you very much for having me, first of all, Karl. You know, I'm coming to sustainability field from the study of religions, and I got my PhD in sociology. Funnily, scholars of religion also deal with the questions of sustainability in many ways. Foremost, they have been asking whether religion is sustainable within the modern societies, that is, whether it is going to persist, or will it cease to exist eventually? And we also studied the relationship that different religious traditions create, not only towards their social, but also their natural environment, etc. There we can ask whether various religions are consistent with what we understand as sustainability, for example. And are the particular belief systems coherent with our ideas of natural environment protection, human well-being, etc.? So should I speak as a sociologist? I must say I understand the very basic questions sociology poses to be about sustainability, actually. As in continuity or endurance of social phenomena in itself. We are interested not only in individuals' behaviors, communities, institutions, but also in how social structures and systems arise and how they continue existing or not. And that is a question of sustainability par excellence. And to answer your question, sustainability can obviously be many things, depending on how we operationalize it. These days, we usually refer to the 17 SDGs by the UN, right? Mm. And for me, at least, for the moment, it is foremost a process. I can see that there is a goal that is a state of being, a kind of social homeostasis, maybe, and trying to navigate us collectively towards such a state is one thing, and sustainability, the individuals, and sustaining the individual hallmarks we have already reached is yet another. As long as there is a space-time, there is no complete stability, right? So nothing gets conserved forever, so to say. And for me personally, sustainability is also an opportunity. It opens, I would say, new door towards a more collaborative and interdisciplinary work with colleagues from philosophy, medicine, architecture, law, biology, you name it. And this is not only exciting, but essential, I think, to how I see our purpose, our vocation, actually. So, you know, in this podcast, in his podcast, Lives Well Lived, a philosopher of ethics and an animal rights activist, Peter Singer, whom you know for sure, hosted an economist, well-being expert, and a Nobel Prize winner, Danny Kahneman, just 2 weeks before he deliberately died. And the interview touched me really. And towards the end of it, Kahneman stated that the most cherished times in his working life was the times he spent co-working, you know, in collaboration. And I thought it says a lot about the importance of purposeful social bonding too. And sustainability as a scientific topic demands an interdisciplinary and international collaboration, I think. It is also a political topic, of course, and in my view, perhaps in the first place. So, but to think that means more science of sustainability is needed. And if we are to have a solid grounding of the concept and its applications as well, and informed public and science-based policy, which in itself is now more and more of a challenge, I think.
Would you say that you broadened the topic of understanding sustainability as a politicized concept, as a normative concept? Would you say that this is the niche or this is the place for, let's say, sociological input to our debate about sustainability science? Because normally it's dominated by, you know, gigawatts and gigatons of CO2. So is sometimes it, this discussion can become, in case for, let's say, climate change, if we take it as an instance, become very technical quite soon. Mm-hmm. So would you say that this is one of the contributions? Is this kind of more also
To soften it, sort of, you mean?
Yeah.
No, I actually think like sustainability as a political topic is one thing. Sustainability as a scientific topic is yet another. And what I'm trying to say is that we need more science, perhaps, and more really solid framing, scientific framing of what we are talking about first, before we start doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Soraya Desailly once wrote a nice article which basically said, it just again, bring it back to the case of climate change, he said, we have enough numbers. Our problem is not the natural scientific aspects behind it. Of course, our models are limited and they are evolving over time and so on and so on. But he wrote basically a plea for more social science in the field of sustainability research. Could you give us an example where you would say sociological insights were able to drive positive change in terms of sustainability?
I'd say there is a place for sociology and social sciences within sustainability field. Absolutely. Climate change, renewable energy, etc. These are all topics that sociology covers as well. Plus, the sustainability itself is indeed a topic to be researched by sociologists. And sociology offers useful theoretical insights and concepts that describe and understand allow us to understand better, to explain the world we live in, the way wealth and power are distributed, the process of social stratification, the rise of social inequalities, the content of the term sustainability often remains blurred, I think, and sociology, being also an empirical science, offers a plethora of research methods as well. You know, sustainability is happening or not happening within the society. It's specific domains and on different levels as well. We cannot simply take it out of its context, right? Sociology has been asking questions about the technological and urban developments, the natural environment, gender, health, social justice, as much and much more, I think, for many decades. So what sociology tells us is that sustainability in its all various ways cannot simply be disconnected from people, from individuals, communities, and institutions. It is to be researched as a product of human interactions as well in itself. A specific sociological problem concerning sustainability would be its objectification as well, its reification, the fact that sustainability became an object that has been ascribed its very own existence and exercises its powers over people's life, and without people noticing that that they actually have been, you know, creating and materializing the sustainability themselves. You know, sociology prides itself to be science as well, and which I'm aware it has been questioned by natural scientists all the way, and often on reasonable grounds. And we must understand sociology is internally diverse enterprise as well, a multi-paradigmatic discipline, we like to call it. And part of it is inspired by natural scientific method, and the other part not so much. So some social scientists strive for objectivity in their research and would argue for sociology to represent an unengaged approach. That means there is no space in it for a value-loaded prospect of a positive change, as you posed your question. Our task is foremost then to describe and explain the state of affairs, basically, okay? And the others endorse reflexivity or even over-direct social engagement, actually, and may have trouble separating science and politics, for example. So whatever position you take as a sociologist, I think we need to remember we deal with people, and people often have some idea about what is going wrong with their lives and what should be improved. And so our task then is to ask about it directly or indirectly, which is what the well-being scientists have been doing. And they ask this on the micro level and the macro level as well, using various kinds of statistical data. But let me tell you this, firstly, quite naturally, as human beings, we ask the question of how can we live well or better, right? In other words, how can we minimize the suffering? That's the big question, isn't it? It is essentially a question that is begging a normative answer, obviously, and part of our job as social scientists is to ask who defines what is good, to whom does it serve, and how. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, People ask how we can make the achievements last and how can we secure a nourishing environment for us and others over space and time. So how can we live fulfilled and satisfying lives over generations as well? And I believe sociology can help us to understand where we actually stand. What are the social drivers of poverty, social inequalities, health risks, or even environmental pollution? Again, it is hard to think sustainability without some kind of human agency attached to it. Natural scientists often tend to overlook this agent, you know, in their research. But that's,
I mean, sometimes they don't have to, because if you're a chemist, you're dealing with molecules, and normally they, you know, they don't have a kind of social interaction between them.
Yeah, but there is the interaction of the scientists with.
Of course, yeah, but on a material level, it's kind of, that's not present there in most.
It's unseen.
It's it's pure physics and beyond
oftentimes.
This.
Oftentimes.
But I'd like to tap in, because you mentioned the term well-being before, and. I always think it's one of the more interesting topics, or concepts quality of life or happiness, which definitely originated out of the social sciences, and they are bringing these concepts into the field of sustainability science. But we would say how do they connect to the topic of sustainability? Because you said before, well-being and not have to suffer. Would this be a definition for it, or is this more? I guess it's more elaborate. But could you enlighten us on this?
So for me, the quality of life and happiness and well-being, these were actually the topics that through which I got to the field of sustainability myself, because. 3.5 years ago, my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer. He passed away last year. And so all we've been through somehow got me more interested in what we can do about, you know, improving our lives, improving how the system works as well, how relationships between us and also between us and the professionals work, etc. So this is how I got to the sustainability field. Basically, now I've got a research application submitted with colleagues from the Czech Republic and abroad as well, where we want to look closer at the topic of pain management and how biomedicine and also alternative healing practices can help us, you know, navigate through these difficult periods of our lives, perhaps better, more sustainable maybe on many ways. I actually, to speak more generally, I actually see this as perhaps the most prevalent sphere of sociological input to sustainability science. We have all heard about the three domains, right? The three pillars of sustainability, environmental, economic, and the social. And again, the social sustainability is defined in many different ways. For example, in business, it is often perceived as a charity work and philanthropy, etc. And in the social sciences discourse, the social sustainability gets conflated with quality of life, well-being, or happiness. And they do not equal. And their operationalization vary hugely. There have been many international surveys done, of course, in the field of quality of life. There has been the International Society for Quality of Life Research, OECD, House Life, or World Happiness Report based on the Gallup World Poll, etc. So we've got a lot of data, as you mentioned yourself, also in the field of social sustainability, so to say. So we know a lot about how people or nations are doing in various domains in their lives, in health, economy, education, or social security. And importantly, in this field, more emphasis has been put on the social, the so-called subjective evaluations. And the quality of life surveys that research life satisfaction are actually interested in what people themselves have to say about their lives instead of instead of analyzing objective data as such as income solely. So also this prosperity, also the prosperity of the nations is not viewed purely through the GDP anymore. Well-being has become, as you'll have noticed, surely a hot topic in corporates and businesses, where we witness a wave of mindfulness courses and such things. But quality of life research is not only about mindfulness courses, that needs to be said. We have been witnessing a rise of cardiovascular diseases and cancer in young people, and etc. So the interest is more complex, also the interest in more complex approaches to also patients' well-being has risen in the medical sphere too. And in religion, the research has shown that being a member of religious community correlates with higher degrees of life satisfaction, for example. So generally, I think belonging to any kind of community, be it religious or non-religious one, where people can share some common values and time together, creates a sense of belonging, that this increases our life satisfaction, obviously. And so it is not only money that make people happy, but also, but they are the baseline, nevertheless.
I think that that's an important insight. I mean, it's not, I know it's the saying, money makes the world go round, but obviously it might not really make us happy to up to certain points.
Yes, exactly. So there is this very famous study of Danny Kahneman from the 2010, where he comes up with particular numbers with regards to the relationship between wealth and happiness. Yeah, there is a certain limit to it.
In this case, it's a bit like having beer. So maybe the eighth beer might not be that satisfactory than the first one.
It does not. Yeah, there is never ending. There is no never ending linear or a correlation. You know.
It's if we try to round up and connect also the stuff we've been discussing right now was kind of, I would say, insights from social sciences into the field of sustainability. But if we again take a bit more macro perspective and connect it to, I would say, the significant headwinds sustainable development efforts are facing right now across the globe, in the States, in Austria, where we see a lot of skepticism about, you know, concepts like well-being, happiness, diversity and inclusion, climate change mitigation, and so on, because it's often seen as kind of woke or elitist, or and in most cases incompatible with, you know, robust, whatever robust might mean, economic development. You know, it's kind of saying that it's kind of a luxury topic, or is often framed as a luxury topic. Would you share this short assessment? And if yes, what do you make out of it?
Thank you. I actually see both tendencies coexist. On one hand, I think the environment for developing a sustainability science is very potent, actually. Now, a lot of money has been poured to the field. The topic has been voiced by communities. It has become also part of global political discussion. So that's on the bright side of it. On the other hand, it's very much top-down process now, and people often don't like to be told what to do. What I see as a major problem is the lack of trust in the governments and its institutions. I also think a lot of people are a priori, or might be a priori, anti-science these days, and possibly also anti-sustainability for actually lack of understanding of the concept itself, that it actually has to do with their life, really, as well. But that's partly our fault, and perhaps, because sometimes there is a discrepancy between what the promise is and how it is then enacted by professionals. And the fact that there is a medicine that they that may cure you out there in the world, you know, does not mean that the doctor will prescribe it to you for many possible reasons. The fact that a politician promised to raise the salaries for university teachers by 100% in 2 years, which did not happen, right? does not mean that he or she will do it. And another problem is the gap between the poorest and the richest is not closing up. And you don't care about the country's GDP when you struggle to feed your family, right, on a daily basis, to meet the ends at the end of the month. Anyway, podcasts like this, you know, may work towards changing the bit about educating the public about sustainability and avoid misconceptions. Yeah,
you know, that's our motto: to inform, to educate, and to entertain.
Wonderful.
But I mean, despite all these more, let's say, doom and gloomy aspects on the topic, you're involved in opening up a new sustainability-related program at your University of South Bohemia. Can you tell us a little bit more about your program?
Yes, thank you very much. there is a new study program called Sustainability Management to be launched this winter semester. It is quite unique in a couple of ways. It is a bachelor program which is very practically oriented. This means, among other things, that the students will spend 12 weeks doing internships in companies and businesses, etc. It is profiled as an interdisciplinary program where all three domains of sustainability are covered. It is actually also the first time that the study program that was designed in collaboration of all USB, University of South Bohemia faculties, we will welcome 20 students each year, and I'm responsible for two core subjects there: society and sustainability, and soft skills for managers. And there has been a sustainability working group also founded at the Faculty of Science, which includes students too. The idea is to have such a group for the whole university. And I personally believe it is necessary to cooperate on the topic internationally with universities abroad as well.
This is a very, very good point. It's, you know, international exchange and cooperation. Since you're here at IMC on an Erasmus grant, what role can cooperation and exchange play in advancing sustainability goals at our level of universities, but also beyond?
Right. Well, for me, internationalization is a kind of central topic it's been one of the things which keeps me going and makes my work exciting and meaningful for me. And as I said, I see cooperation as a way to, as a way we ought to work, actually, and as solitary scholar, you know, a thinker who thinks deep about the life and then comes out of the cave to tell the world how it is. This is a myth, isn't it? So, of course, we need some time on our own, and actually I think academic career can be a rather solitary enterprise, unfortunately. But to thrive, and for science to thrive, we then need to go out and give and receive stimuli, right? And to work in a team that fits well, I think together is a bliss. And international exchange in broader sense is absolutely crucial. We need each other, we read each other, and we meet and we collaborate and learn together. And it starts really with what opportunities you provide your students with. As, yeah, and as a teacher, I have enjoyed supporting my students in gaining their international experience in every possible way, I dare to say. There are so many ways now that include strategies covered by the term internationalization and home as well. Yeah, as a former vice dean for international affairs and PR, I understand the importance of international development beyond the student mobilities, of course, and I wish that sustainability program will evolve this way too.
It's, since you mentioned this a bit, let's say, when you're here for the first time, you said internationality at home. So this, on the first hand, it sounds a bit illogic, because you think, well, how can this work? You can't be international and at home. But then I figured out, you even wrote a paper on it, and it covered the question of virtual mobilities and how they can enhance competences of students. I think this was in the students in the field of social sciences. But I don't want to spoil everything for possible readers, and by the way, go ahead and read it. But what was the outcome? Are virtual mobilities, because sometimes they have a kind of bad reputation, you know, there is this kind of corona vibe hanging around it, and saying, this, oh, you want to confine us again. So, but did you see, were there possible negative enhancements visible?
So, sure. Well, first of all, let me tell you, you know, the IMC, the university where we are sitting now, I understand to be very much internationalized and international in itself. So apparently this is very much possible, you know, to make it happen on the spot in many ways. But yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? So in this study, in this particular study you mentioned, we looked at the students' experience with virtual mobilities during the pandemic, and in three Central European countries. And obviously, virtual mobility cannot substitute fully the traditional physical mobility in all its dimensions. But especially when faced with some restrictions of the movement or some individual, even individual indispositions of any kind, this can be a way to gain some international experience. The vital factor in the evaluation seemed to be the engagement, the active participation, and and debates in the online classes that the students appreciated the most. And depending on the course design, it proves to be doable thing. It proves to be doable that the students learn some skills as well as gain some knowledge. So,
But also based on the expertise in there, if we, because there is an often uttered, or at least in Austria, is often uttered the sustainability angle on virtual mobility, but also virtual classroom concepts and so on. And this is to reduce the physical need for mobility, the need for physical mobility. So you said that you don't have to fly that often, you don't have to travel by car that often, and so on. So this would kind of indicate a shift to do more virtual / online / whatever you want to call it. There are different ways of doing it. But what would you say from your perspective regarding strategies of higher education institutions? Should they put more leverage on this kind of virtual, let's call it virtual activities within the strategies, what would be your recommendation on it, or your perspective mm-hmm. on it?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely been a thing for many high education institutions. There's been a confusion, though, around what virtual mobility actually is, what it means, mm-hmm. how it looks. Often it gets conflated with other methods, such as COIL, collaborative online learning, international learning. They all have their benefits and downsides, of course. Generally, I personally am open to these new formats of teaching and learning, systematically supported virtual mobilities at the University of Hradec Králové during the pandemic. And we have dozens of students each semester participating on virtual mobilities that would be classified as both incoming and outgoing in the traditional sense, right? Even though there was no physical mobility going on, actually. And I was holding courses for the international students online myself. And of course, there are challenges. And I learned a lot doing this. You cannot secure a stable VLAN for the students on the other side of the world, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? For many students, this was the only chance to gain any international university experience in mm-hmm. their whole study, and many found it very enriching. So. Especially the intercultural element was interesting for them, which is interesting in itself because mm-hmm. they didn't physically meet and they mm-hmm. didn't have this, you know, everyday experiences of living in the country. And I think universities should promote these online formats if only for the sake of some disadvantaged students. Mm-hmm. Moreover, online learning also motivates to undertake physical mobility, as we have found.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. So it could be a good, let's say, low-level entry point into this international dimension. Mm-hmm. On the other aspect, there would be, I have no doubt, a postdoctoral candidate who is going to stay for a year at mm-hmm. an institution, but in there's a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I always have the impression that this might be a good entry, low-level entry point of kind of making it very easy.
Exactly so. Mm-hmm. Can serve as a first step.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent. So we know where to start, and also we know where to end, since time is running out. But it's really fun to talk to you. But I have to come to the last question, and that's also stuff I learned from Victoria. There has to be a tough question also at the end, and the tough question, of course, comes back to sustainability. And since you spend a lot of time on the topic, is there an advice you could give our students or our listeners out there to be more sustainable in their professional careers or even at home or in the private lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think of myself as a sustainability expert per se, but I think we should probably all pay a close attention to how our values are or are not consistent with our actions. And I'd also hope for more community and public life participation in the Czech Republic I'm learning this myself slowly as well. And to tackle once again the social sustainability or the quality of science, there are protocols based on science out there about what we can do to enhance our well-being and happiness. The quality of our relationship seems to play a crucial role mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And so does the presence of community in one's life, which is what I suspect many of us might be missing. Helping others seem to be yet another socially defined factor mm-hmm. That makes our lives filled with sense of purpose. Personally, I quite like what Matthew Hussey, a relationship coach, has to say to this. And he says, at the beginning of our life, we were given a person. And it is our responsibility to take care of this person, us, that is, mm-hmm. the best mm-hmm. we can. And so let's try. And I would add taking care of others, being caring towards people, sometimes just taking our eyes off the phone, you know, might help in public spaces especially. Taking care, being caring towards our social and also in our natural environment is definitely of no less importance. However vague this might sound now. Mm-hmm. Well, we are all learning, so let us keep learning.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a wonderful end statement. Life's a journey, and there's still a lot of time for us. So thanks for joining us today.
Many thanks. Thank you, Carl. It's a pleasure.
So, yeah, and also thanks for joining us, your listeners out there. And with this, our visit to the Sustainability Café comes to an end. Thanks for your interest in sustainability at IMC Grams and beyond. You can find this and all other episodes at imcsustainabilitycafe.prodigy.io. The podcast is produced by our wonderful colleagues at the IMC Media Lab. If you have any feedback or questions, feel free to send them to sustainability@imc.ac.at. I would be happy if you would tune in to our other episodes as well. Till then, take care, tschüss, and ciao.